Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Show tapes live some Thursdays on YouTube, channels A and N Zach. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. I hope you enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to AnCast. Welcome back to AnCast. I'm Zach Burchy. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
We haven't had a show in a little while.
It's been a couple weeks.
There's a show we got to talk about, though. And, like, so I've been really busy putting together the manga guide, and you've been pretty busy with a bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, mostly just kind of been keeping up with the show, Darling in the Franxx.
Uh-huh.
Jacob, I gotta tell you, I do kind of wish I never started watching this.
Oh, do you really?
I do. Yeah, it's, if I'd never engaged in the first place, then I wouldn't still have to. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I made a promise. I was like, I'm gonna keep watching this no matter how dumb it gets.
Yeah.
And boy, am I learning my lesson about that.
I don't regret it. I was gonna anyway. I watched all of Crossange, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And I don't mind. I'm just like, all right, I'm here for it. Bring it if you don't like what I have to say about this thing. But like, I enjoy just sort of like partaking in what people are discussing, and people are discussing this, so I'm gonna partake.
You know,
but like,
I
feel like we can talk about it in a way where it doesn't feel like we're I don't know, like challenging people or being too bulldogish about it. I just look, I'm not trying to threaten anybody or say like, if you don't hate this, you're wrong. I don't feel that way. I'm just trying to explain how I feel about the show as honestly and as clearly as I possibly can. And this is not a challenge, and I have strong opinions, but like, this is not a challenge to you and how you feel about the show. If you love Darling in the Franxx, that's fine. And it doesn't say anything about you, whether if you love the show or whatever. I don't like it, and my reasons for not liking it can get political sometimes. That's okay. You know what I mean?
Well, look, I mean, you and I are married.
Yeah.
So we come at this show from that perspective. It's not necessarily that... Well, it most certainly is not that you can't have conservative cartoons or cartoons that are ambiguously conservative.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's what people are taking umbrage with, is the idea that this show posits any right wing anything whatsoever. Because in point of fact, like, it is about rebels fighting against a fascist state, but the fascist state represents...
Conservatives frame themselves that way constantly.
I know, but look, I'm trying to explain this in the most basic way I can, so as not to raise any ire.
Sure.
But like, the fact of the matter is, just because you have rebels fighting against a fascist state does not mean that the fascist state is not framed as basically a boogeyman of progressivism, because it is in Darling in the Franxx. So
I feel like we're getting ahead of ourselves
right.
a little bit here. First. Uh-huh. I just want to say I haven't seen the Han Solo movie yet.
Right.
So. I'm very excited to... Okay, that's not true.
That's not true.
I have been told that it is the most mediocre to ever mediocre. Uh-huh. And look, if you want to watch a Ron Howard film, watch the movie Cocoon.
Oh my God.
You want to see like what kind of fucked up shit those guys got up to in the 80s? Watch that movie, Cocoon.
Just watch the music video to Cocoon.
Directed by Ron Howard.
Yes. But
yes.
Specifically...
The idea... Okay, you see Wilford Brimley naked in that movie a lot.
Yeah.
And it's like old people get spirited away into outer space by dolphins.
Uh-huh.
Cocoon. Anyway, that guy directed the Han Solo movie.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it yet. Maybe we'll see it this weekend, but... So that's kind of the only other media I was paying attention to in the last week before we really get into it here.
Mm-hmm.
So the last couple episodes of Darling in the Franxx, let's run it down.
Sorry, I was still thinking about Michael Cimbello's amazing song for Cocoon, which don't watch the film. Just go look up Michael Cimbello.
There's a scene where Wilford Brimley gets naked and he's like creeping through the bathroom and he goes, "You want a piece of candy, little girl?"
He's talking to his wife.
And then he's talking to his wife.
But, yeah.
Why is that his sexual fantasy? Not only that,
luring his wife into an unmarked van.
You're being subjected to the sight of naked Wilford Brimley saying, "Do you want a piece of candy, little girl?"
But he's got his vitality back. Don't you feel for him?
No.
No. Don't you want to see Wilford Brimley fuck?
No.
Anyway, Michael Cimbello wrote, I can't remember the title of it, but Michael Cimbello wrote the theme song for Cocoon, in a music video that's directed partly by Ron Howard, and Ron Howard has an intro to it, and he's like, something happened to Michael Cimbello. Yeah. He got spirited away by aliens, and then the music video starts. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
You don't know, Michael Cimbello is a one-hit wonder who created the song Maniac. She's a maniac on the floor. You know that song.
This is what I'm going to be thinking about while I'm
exactly.
watching that.
So now you have some context for, and they're singing dolphins in the music video because dolphins are like the emblems of the aliens who give people the magic sex power, the old people the magic sex powers when they swim in the old folks' home's pool in Cocoon. This is just a film that exists.
Cocoon might be the weirdest, like it might be the weirdest single movie directed by like a super mainstream director by like Ron Howard. Like. Right. Ron Howard directed, like, didn't he direct Forrest? No, that was Robert Zemeckis. Ron Howard directed the Da Vinci Code and, like, you know, Willow and Apollo 13.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Apollo 13 is the one he's known for.
Apollo 13, I think, is a great movie. Mm-hmm. I still love that movie.
He made Apollo 13 and a bunch of weird crap.
But never as weird as Cocoon.
Yeah.
Never as weird as Cocoon. I strongly suggest that if you like that kind of weird shit, seek it out. And then watch the Han Solo movie. So the last couple episodes of Darling in the Franxx.
Okay. We had to come back to this, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I was so happy to talk about Cocoon for a while.
Anyway, so we're talking about Ron Howard's Cocoon film in which.
Okay, so in episode 17 of Darling in the Franxx, which one was that? That was the one where.
I believe 19 is the most recent. Well, look, you don't have to specify
18
numbers.
Is the most recent.
Things happened in the last two episodes, the last 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks, which is what we're talking about.
Up to that point, basically nothing happened over and over. We hit the same. Before we get into the controversy, let's just talk about like my difficulty with Darling in the Franxx. I'm sure you share this. Like before we got to like fully, you can't turn back. This is definitely what the show is saying, which I'm going to point out. I called it episode 7. Something like, you can go back and listen to the podcast, but, like, I 100% said, hey, this is a, like, oh, the poor queers, we will fix them, and really, a woman's happiness is to have a child, and a man's happiness is to help her raise the child. I called this back in episode 7, so I'm kind of happy to be vindicated now, but before that happened, we had a lot of time wasting with, like, and this is my biggest struggle with Darling in the Franxx is not its political perspective at all. It's the just the very lazy storytelling. It's like they separated them over, man, and people lost their mind over that Ichigo thing where she's like, oh, you guys have to be separate or she'll kill you, which, by the way, is a reasonable stance to take. And then you think, oh, they're going to be separated for like, you know, two episodes, three, while they work out some stuff and we get and while while Zero Two is with these other characters, the villain characters, we can learn more about the other squads and the other side of it. But no, none of that happens at all. They reconcile in the next goddamn episode, having learned nothing about the other side, having not really developed Hiro's relationship with the other characters and what they think of him now that he's sort of betrayed them for Zero Two. None of that is explored. It's just, we just want to get to the catharsis. They were separated for a brief moment, and now they're back together, and they're so in love. And it's like, the show just does not earn any of the, like, extremely cookie-cutter beats that it pulls out. It's beautifully animated, often beautifully storyboarded, but it just rushes.
Visually, it's not interesting at all anymore.
I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt on that one because, look, everybody has different tastes, and certainly the artists are working hard to make this look like an impressive production. But I tell you what, like, the story ideas are just not interesting. It's just like, like somebody laid out, like, the plot structure of a series like this, and then they just executed those beats like with nothing that builds up between them to make you feel something about it. It's just like, they're in love. See, can't you tell how much these guys love each other? And I, not really. You didn't really develop it. Like, and then here's a big action scene, and now they're reunited. And after the, but the thing that separated them was just a weird misunderstanding. It was just Hiro was out of his hospital room for like 2 seconds. Zero Two happened to walk in at that moment, thought everybody was lying to her, and then tried to murder them. And then Hiro shows up and is like, "Oh, you tried to murder my friends. Bye." That's not an interesting conflict between them that arises from their difference in personalities or anything. That's a coincidence that's being used to forcibly separate these two just so they can get back together as soon as possible and be like, "See, they overcame something together." So yeah, I don't. So even before we get into the politics, I just don't think it's a very well-told story. I think it's really fucking paint-by-numbers and bland.
Well, it's not just paint-by-numbers. Okay, so I find it interesting that like the only conversation that you can have about Darling and the Franks is this stuff.
Yeah.
There's no other conversation to have because the show isn't interested in anything else. It's not. It's not really all that interested in its own lore.
It's remarkable how little it has explored any of that stuff.
Well, what it's interested in is presenting these sort of archetypes of different sexualities and different ways of interacting with other people.
I would say different hierarchies within a social structure, even within a classroom. You have like, you have the class clown, you have the chubby kid, you have the sort of the like cool kid who is Hiro, like basically the very charismatic, attractive, like won the genetic lottery kid, and then you have Mitsuru, who is I have that name right?
Mitsuru is the one.
And Mitsuru is sort of the less firmly baked gingerbread man compared to Hiro, and he knows it, and this makes him incredibly insecure because, you know, masculinity, competition, that sort of thing. And he also, he did originally have feelings for Hiro, but that's a whole nother ball of wax.
Well, okay, maybe we'll get to that, but, like, the only thing that the show is really particularly interested in is the relationships between these characters, how they interact with each other, and they're all presented as, in this dystopian society where you're not allowed to love who you want to love, I guess?
It's more that you're not allowed to, think way, 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 way back to where...
Your emotions have all been suppressed.
Yes, your emotions are deadened.
And if you're an adult, your genitals have been ripped out.
Did they say that? They didn't say genitals.
Adults don't have genitals.
They did not say genitals. They said reproductive tissue. Like, they said, like... Basically, your castrati, you know, they don't like rip your nads. You don't rip your dick off. You need.
I mean, look, that's
piss.
Just. I get to the show. I always come to the most blunt conclusion. So like that's.
Right.
They said
sterilize.
I'm just assuming Dr. Franks has like this robot arm that comes in and rips your dick off. When you turn 31,
you're just medically sterilized. The same thing was done in like The Giver and Brave New World, like not Brave New World because that was a sex pacified society, but a lot of societies where it's supposed to be a dystopia where people have no desires anymore. You're sterilized and then babies are grown and given to you.
Sure.
This has been done before. However. Usually when this is done, I haven't seen many stories where the ultimate act of rebellion against this is to be like specifically heterosexual coupling with a child. It's not just only man and woman, although they do make that clear that this is important. It's also with a child. You will not be fulfilled until you will not be able to awaken your emotions unless you were using your womb to further the future of humanity. Almost text in the show. They have a conversation where this is almost explicitly stated, where they equate the ability to have any desires and emotions and any drive in life to raising a family. So that is the show's goal.
Yeah, which, look, we've been watching anime and media from Japan for a long time, and, like, there's a lot of stuff where the point is have kids.
Sure.
You know, this is a country with a extremely,
and I don't think there's anything
extremely
wrong with that.
Publicized issue with its birth rate.
Mm-hmm.
And the government there reacts to that in ways like this. Like, they promote this kind of thing. Like, there's stuff like that. So, you know, it's not super weird to see that kind of a message.
And there's
like
nothing
this.
Wrong with that message. The issue comes when instead of saying like, oh, people aren't having children for any number of reasons, and you form dystopia around why people aren't having children, into people literally like die with no emotional fulfillment because having children is the thing that gives women emotional fulfillment, and protecting a woman and raising a child is the thing that gives men emotional fulfillment. That is, it is very hardline this specifically.
Yeah, like, do they know that sometimes that's not true? And yeah, actually a lot of times that's not true? And have they, like, did literally anyone working on this think about it from a not heterosexual perspective?
Well, and I don't even want to say just heterosexual. I also, like, I feel like you could, you know, excising queer characters is one thing, and that's a whole conversation, but also just, like, specifically the man has to be in control, the woman has to be submissive. Like, all of this stuff is textually, like, reinforced. One of the reasons we were so confused about this story to begin with was that we were like, are they enforcing heterosexuality? Is that the fascist regime? Because the fact of the matter is the world building in Frank sucks, and we couldn't tell. We had not seen other squads. We had not seen how the rest of the world was living. We just saw the Franks. And as it turns out, so when you see the Franks in isolation, you're like, oh, this is an awfully restrictive system where the woman has to be doggy style and the man has to be controlling her, and they have to pilot this robot this specific way, and these are children who have never been given sex education. That's fucked up. So
grab
those
ass handles and get to work.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. When we first saw the show, we thought that was what was being dismantled, but it wasn't. As it turns out, now that we've been given a bigger picture, that is considered progressive, right? That's considered rebellious. That's Dr. Franks's specific weird take. All of the other squads are controlled either by, like, so the evil squad is reverse. It's women puppeting men, and they have a character we haven't learned. He's just been like a flat villain. We haven't learned anything about 9 Alpha or 9S, but there's like, they're trying to imply that 9 Alpha or 9S is some sort of hermaphroditic, like, and forgive the term, but that's basically what they're implying, like, experiment. And so it's like, oh no, this is becoming much more clear that what we thought was maybe a restrictive thing is actually being framed as the right way. Like, Dr. Franks cracked the code. He's like, oh, we've all locked away our biological urges, and all of these other Klaxosaur combating robot forces are non-gendered and non-role given. They're just people piloting robots. But I cracked the code because I figured out that you have to have a boy controlling a girl in this way, in this robot, and I want them to awaken their desire to procreate. And so now we know that that is actually being framed as a good thing, not a bad thing, and that the bad guys are want to abolish all gender and all desire, which is a weird, like, that's, first of all, that's not a thing that anybody wants.
That's not a thing.
The desire, so
that's a conservative stereotype.
Yeah, and it's
of
weird.
Leftists. It's a conservative stereotype of progressives. It is, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. It's a shitty boogeyman. This is a lot like, it reminds me a lot of these conservative Christian movies where it's a lot about persecution complex. It's very much like, The framing of the film is there's a brave conservative Christian mm-hmm. who wants to have, like, a nativity scene in the town square.
Uh-huh.
And they frame a pack of, like, atheists, Jewish folks, and some Muslims show up and get, like, weirdly mad about there literally just being a nativity scene.
Which is not a thing that has ever happened.
Which has never fucking happened at all.
Uh-huh.
That is literally framing, like, I just perceive people who are not like me as a threat to me.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, just there being a Hanukkah thing in the town square is perceived as being somehow persecuting Christians.
Yeah, and it's like,
you know,
we want a nativity. It's like, you can't have a nativity, only all these other things. So basically they're framing...
Like, we're married. Mm-hmm. Our marriage gets framed as a threat to heterosexuality and a threat to the Christian way of life.
Right, and you see
this... A dangerous undermining threat, mm-hmm. right? And so how else are you supposed to look at a show like this?
How else
are you really supposed to feel about it when you come at it from a perspective like ours?
Well, you see this echoed in Frank, specifically in... So basically, I think the thing a lot of these really conservative sort of think PC things have in common is that they're trying to frame diversity as homogeny somehow.
Yes.
Basically, the fact of the matter is, you know, everybody celebrating their own holidays around that time of year does not make it so people can't celebrate Christmas. Christmas is still numero uno, and there nobody is telling that you can't celebrate Christmas just because they're trying to be inclusive and say, like, happy holidays to other people who don't celebrate Christmas. Nobody's saying you can't have your fucking Christmas. And so, but all it is diversity. All it is saying everybody can have their holidays that they celebrate because the world is a big place and there's, you know, seasonal celebrations, basically winter solstice type celebrations that happen all across the world at different, and we live in a global society and they are going to confront one another sometimes. But they try to frame it as homogeny, as though, like, oh, everything but the thing that I like is allowed to exist, and it's not true. But they have to frame it propagandically. To compare that to Frank's briefly, would people want gender diversity and more expansive roles for women and more expansive roles for men and stuff like that, they're not taking away the traditional family. And they're not saying you can't have children. Gay couples can adopt. A woman can have children and work, and there can be a stay-at-home father. There's any number of ways to do this that is – there's no, like – one right way to do this. In fact, here's a fun statistic for you. If you're talking about the healthiest children, purely statistically, the healthiest children have been raised by lesbian couples. If you're talking about, like, just basic statistics in terms of like most mentally well adjusted and successful and you know, without a lot of psychological baggage, that kind of thing, like, strictly speaking, lesbian couples have been the most successful at this.
I mean, I'd like to see that. Whatever.
Yeah, I will. You know what? I will link that. So I will link that source in the description for the podcast because I don't want to say it without linking a source. But it is absolutely firmly trod ground at this point. But my point. But that's not a superior way to do things. It's just the point is that there's no, like, oh, man has to be in control of the woman who bears a child and they raise it together and the man is supportive. Like, that's not being persecuted. That is the most common thing on planet Earth, and nobody is saying that you can't do that anymore. But Darling in the Franxx posits a society where, for some reason, diversity, as in everybody just wants to express their own way of being, of gender. There are feminine men, there are masculine women, there are women who love women, there are men who love men. There are all sorts of stuff out there. There are heterosexual men and women where the woman is the more dominant one and the man takes care of the children. There are a lot. That's just diversity. And so Frank's framing it as, like, oh, what they really want is for all gender to be abolished, which really means that everybody is, like, the same hermaphroditic thing and nobody wants kids. That's not a thing anybody wants. Like,
it's not.
This isn't real. It's propaganda.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... Look, it's... I'm not saying that there's there's no other valid reading of the show, or that it's not... Like, somehow you can't say this, but if you're gonna say it, you're going to get some feedback from people like us.
And there's nothing wrong with saying, like, hey, we have a replacement rate issue in Japan, and confronting it and, like, encouraging people to have children. There's nothing wrong with that. But when doing that, you should probably address what the actual causes of the birth rate decline are. And it's not the desire for gender diversity. Like, there's a lot of factors. I'm not going to say what, like, you know, oh, here's the defining factors, but two that we know of are immigration policies and benefits for women in the workplace. Basically, women have to choose between having children and working, and a lot of women have chosen to work. They're like, hey, I can't afford to, I'm not supported to have a child and work at the same time, so I'm going to work because I like my fucking job.
Yeah.
And immigration is a
whole other.
Yeah, and
being able to, like, afford shit and, like, pay for things.
Exactly.
In addition to having a child.
Mm-hmm. So, like, and there's lots of other factors, but I can tell you what, it's not that look at Japan. It's not that the gender deviants are taking over Japan. That's definitely not the reason that the birth rate is declining. It's absolutely not. So, yeah, Darling in the Franxx is irresponsible on this level. That's all I'm saying. I'm not, like, really mad that this disagrees with my worldview. I'm just saying it's dishonest. It doesn't match research. It doesn't match...
Yeah, it's Christmas with a capital C.
Yeah, Christmas with a capital C, which is a Kirk Cameron film?
No, that stars Judd... I think it's Judd Nelson?
Oh, okay.
Bender from The Breakfast Club.
Oh, my God.
He plays the mayor of a town where some evil... I think atheists, Jews, and Muslims are trying to do literally anything other than just celebrate only Christmas.
Right.
And this is treated as, like, I'm being oppressed. Mm-hmm. Help. Help.
Yeah. And I know people are bringing up like, oh, but what if this society existed? What if it did?
What do you mean, what if it existed?
It has no relevance to the problems that the show is addressing about Japan right now, which is the point of a dystopian allegory like that, is that it has relevance to the modern day.
Here's an example of a dystopian thing that has relevance to modern day. The Handmaid's Tale, all right? There's a story that feels rooted in something real because it is. Mm-hmm. The subjugation of women were property until what? 100 years ago? Not even that. They couldn't even vote.
It's been over 100 years since women could vote, yeah. Just barely.
It was the 20s. That was the 1920s. It's not 2020 yet. It has not been 100 years, I don't think. Like, when did they get the right to vote?
Oh, no, yeah, it was passed in 1919, so yeah, not 100 years.
Next year. No, yeah,
I thought it was
year.
Like 102, 103.
Next year, it'll only be... Do you know how long is the average human lifespan?
Right.
70 or 80 years? It takes society a really long time to change, and it's only been about a human lifetime plus about 10 years since women were able to vote.
In America.
Vote. Literally exercise our basic democratic franchise. Barely a human lifespan. Mm-hmm. The idea that this is, oh, what are you saying? Everything's equal. Come on, man. We don't change that quick. Mm-hmm. Like, we just don't. So the idea that, like, somehow, like, we're switching over into this tyranny of diversity, which is a fucking... absurd thing to say in the first place.
Right.
I struggle with it. And that's what this shit... When I watch this show, that's what it reminds me of. That's what it makes me think about, is stuff made by people who have this weird, paranoid complex about people who are not inside the, I guess, status quo. Exercising their right, having agency, having civil rights, being able to love who they want to love and be who they want to be with. I also think it's really kind of weird and fucked up, the obsession with, like, but the species won't survive unless I stop you from being gay. Like,
right.
The species will not make it unless we oppress, like, this one particular type of human being.
Also, and so we're also talking about this, we don't know actually how humans are created in Franks, and that's obviously going to be a big reveal. Maybe it's, I don't know, Klaxus or something. But, like, Klaxus, they gotta do something with the actual enemies they made for this fucking show. But, like, we don't actually know what causes human birth in Franks, but I could tell you, if it's not people having sex, then it diminishes the metaphor all the more, because, like, if you don't have a replacement... In fact, Franks, they're just disposing of children. They make a bunch of children. Only some of them are useful. They get rid of the rest. So that makes the species is dying, like, you should replenish it thing even more confusing for Franks, because we have, like, fully formed humans that they have a surplus of in Franks. Like... they aren't raised by families, which is definitely a problem, but, like, so obviously the replacement rate is not the issue. The actual issue is just that they want people to have families, so it's not even being honest about the problem that it's confronting in the real world. That's really confusing to me.
Well, yeah, and if this isn't what you're interested in talking about, or somehow we're not supposed to be focusing on this, or this isn't the point... You literally just wasted like 18 episodes, because it's the only thing the show is interested thematically in.
Right.
Like, it's the only focus. Mm-hmm. That's it. You spend all your time sitting here watching these characters interact, and they come up with various ways of certain relationships to come together, and then it's shown that ultimately this doesn't work because you need a man and a woman to make a baby. Mm-hmm. And that's the point of Darling, and that seems like that's the point of the show so far.
I mean, you technically... in the world of Franks, you don't. They appear to be either test tube grown or something else is happening.
But the thing that's being suppressed is that you need a man and a woman to make a baby, and that is violently exploding out of this dystopian system that is designed to somehow suppress that.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
What?
Yeah. What is that?
I don't
know. What's that even rooted in? Nothing.
We haven't even talked about like the Mitsuru and Kokoro.
Okay,
thing.
So
we're just like dancing around it because it's so. Right. It's like I don't even want to bring it up because like. All
right, so Mitsuru has a whole episode where it's just about his unrequited feelings for Hiro.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why he's into Hiro. Hiro seems like a boring asshole to me. He does. He's a boring, unconfident ass wipe who doesn't like. He's what an uninteresting character and an uninteresting relationship, him and Zero Two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just this weird codependent, like, oh, we're so in love. Like, the couple that met and then fucked at the anime con and won't shut up about it.
Well, yeah, and the things
you know
that
what I'm saying? Like, that's what it feels like.
The things that they're attracted to. The things that they're attracted to in one another also baffle me because, like, we know as children that he helped save her, but like as adolescents, he was attracted to her because he had no purpose without her, and she was attracted to him because he didn't die when she sent the robot into overdrive, and it's like that's not love. That's you projecting your emotional needs onto a person and saying like, "Oh, you complete me." And the show frames this as poetic. They're like, "There's a species of bird that can't fly unless that has a one wing and it flies because it leans on another bird with another wing on the opposite side."
But that's a metaphor
for heterosexuality. But it's like that's fucked up. That's not love. Love is something that you choose and you work really hard at because you care about another person and you want to devote your life to them. It's not you finding a person and saying, oh, there's something missing from my life. Give it to me.
I have a biological need for emotional support.
Like,
from a specific species. Like, it. Yeah, man.
From the other gender, yeah. And it's not like only Zero Two or only Hiro could have done that for one another. Like, I mean, like, they do because the show is framed that way. But, like, it's not like this had anything to do with their genders. The show itself is not like, oh, it's because she was a woman or, oh, because he was a man, even though that's their greater argument. Their in-context argument is, like, lore bullshit that they came up with. There's no reason that someone like Mitsuru, like someone like Ichigo and Ikuno, or Mitsuru and Hiro, couldn't offer each other the same thing. It's just lore bullshit. I don't.
Yeah. So one of the things I really do want to get into here, though, is I feel like the Mitsuru thing. I really struggle with this because here's my perception. All right. Mm-hmm. Let me just explain kind of the way I think about Mitsuru and his narrative.
Okay.
I thought that whole episode with him and his feelings about Hiro were largely about someone who had unrequited love for somebody else. He had a his intended uh-huh. was this guy. He was you know, this is the person I'm supposed to be with. This is my partner.
Uh-huh.
He struggles with it. He gets rejected. And, you know, Hiro doesn't want him. And that's made very clear. But the show, in my opinion, he's always framed from angles, and his expression is always as such. Where I never really bought that Mitsuru was, like, accepting this. He was doing what he thought his duty. He was trying to not be selfish, right? That's uh-huh. always kind of how it was framed. Like, he struggles with the feelings, but he basically is sort of taught by his experience to, like, get over it and move on and do the thing you're supposed to do, which is put a baby in this lady, I guess, right? Marry this girl that you were not interested previous, and that's it. And so there's a scene where Mitsuru and Hiro are laying in a river together, and Hiro just insists that he must be in love with someone. Right. He must be in love with Kokoro, right?
Uh-huh.
And Mitsuru is never framed as being happy about this. He's always kind of giving Hiro like an askance look. Like, it's not framed from a sympathetic angle. It's framed from like a, oh. And Hiro is, and
he does,
Hiro,
he
and,
does
and
seem happy. He does seem happy and infatuated, but I have lots of thoughts on that. Well, it isn't, you're right, it isn't a conclusion.
He's crying and embracing her, and he's like, we should do it, we should do this. Like, uh-huh. he doesn't seem happy. He doesn't, it doesn't ever seem to me as though Mitsuru is being framed as, this is what he wants.
Right.
It's his duty. So, he's doing the right thing. He's trying to not be selfish. He's nobly doing the thing So that's kind of my takeaway from that. And that's why I've really had a hard time with his narrative uh-huh. and the way that, you know, some of the discourse I've seen about it.
So I grew up on a lot of Love the Sinner, Hate the Sin style anti-gay propaganda, like a lot of it.
Sure.
My family was, like, on the scale of conservatism, my family was not particularly concerned with people of color or anything like that, or immigrants. Like, they were very welcoming of that, but they were staunchly, staunchly, staunchly anti-gay. And I think that watching Darling in the Franks is bringing back a lot of old memories, because I innately understood what they were doing. And it is like, it's a bit of a Schrodinger's gay. Like, he is and he isn't. He is and he isn't. Like, you're right in that, like, oh, it seems like he's resistant to this, but not really. They're not saying that secretly means he's actually gay. So it's hard to explain. Okay, so I'm going to have to do some deep, like, I'm going to have to talk about the origins of this and take you through both him and Ikuno's characters and explain what they're trying to say. Forget everything you know about how gayness actually works. So this is how the show is framing how it works specifically. So Ikuno and Mitsuru, both as children, their first major interaction with another person that was, like, unconditionally loving and supportive was with a member of the same sex. This is, because there aren't parents in this setting, this is sort of a tweaked version of propaganda that would say, like, oh, well, you got too attached to either your mother or your father or whatever. Like, basically, the conservatives will switch it around. It's either your mom if you're a girl, or your mom if you're a boy, because they're either trading on femininity or attraction to the same sex. It depends on what they're targeting that day. But, like, the point is, the show is framing both Ikuno and Mitsuru's attraction to those characters as, because they showed me love before anyone else did. So it's framing that as a developmental mistake, a sympathetic one, but obviously something that they will grow out of. So that's point A. You have to understand that Darling in the Franks is framing gayness as something that was, like, incidental, that just, you know, that just happened because of who they attached to at a young age, and therefore can change with time. So you have to accept that first. Now, the second thing that you have to accept is that Mitsuru's sexual attraction matters less than his ikigai, if you will, which is, like, finding a deeper purpose that drives you. And there's the breaking down what ikigai is a whole different conversation, but let's just say that it's a Japanese summation for a purpose. It's like what you're good at and can also offer the world and makes you at least somewhat happy. So Mitsuru's real love, the thing that he's, like, turning from Hiro to Kokoro over, is, like, even if he's not, like, super sexually attracted to Kokoro, and he's, like, sort of intimidated by this, and I think more than, I don't think that he finds her unattractive, I think that what they're framing is that he finds himself undesirable, because his whole thing has been an inferiority complex to Hiro. So it's rather than, like, ooh, I don't like girls, which is not really what they've been framing that character of, it's more like, oh, I don't deserve a woman to, like, love me. I have to be, like, controlling, and I have to prove that I'm stronger than Hiro, and, like, he can't really set that aside. Like, somebody loves me for who I am, which in isolation would be a great message, but they're using it for some insidious aims here. So Kokoro, like, professes that she loves this guy, and it's taking him a really, really hard time to accept. And so what Hiro is telling him, and the reason he's so hesitant to accept it, is, like, oh, you're in love. Here, Mitsuru can't accept that he's in love because he doesn't think he deserves it. And so it's not about sexuality there. It's about, like, Hiro is fixing him and making him into a strong man who can be, like, supportive and loving instead of domineering and insecure about other men in his life, is the point. And so Mitsuru is eventually blushing and embracing Kokoro and being like, this is right, because his sexuality, regardless of what it is, whether the show is saying he was gay or just confused or whatever the show is saying about it, it doesn't matter compared to the deep purpose you are given by marrying a woman. And I'm saying that this is the show's message. Marrying a woman and having a child with her and, like, protecting her gives Mitsuru, that's why he's happy, that's why he's blushing. It's not about, like, who he wants to fuck. It's, like, specifically, like, this being a patriarch of a family thing that's, like, oh, that's the real joy, that's the real desire, that's what gives you emotions. So it's very, very old conservative propaganda. But that's what it is. So, and the same thing with Ikuno.
Right. Like, this shit all feels extremely familiar. I've seen these exact statements made. Like, this is doing it in a particularly crappy, passive-aggressive, badly written way. And to me, IMO, totally fucking cowardly. Mm. Just say what you mean.
Yeah.
Just say what you like. The only thing the show is interested in is this stuff, but it's not willing to actually commit to any of it in a real way. And if it's like, wait till the last episode, wait till the last, you wasted how much fucking time? Yeah. Why don't you just tell me what you really think? Which is what I find so frustrating about it. Like, you're wasting my time. You could have done this in 12 episodes and said your whatever shit you're going to say.
Yeah.
Right, I'm, now, it feels like what you're going to say is really fucking disgusting, honestly, to me and my husband. Like,
well, I'm sorry that that took so long to explain, but the reason I had to explain or felt I had to explain it that way is I feel I see a lot of people approaching this show with, like, is he gay or isn't he? Or is it progressive that Ikuno is able to confess her feelings or isn't she? And it's like, no, no, no. You're looking at this from the worldview that, like, being gay is either equal or okay or, like, whatever, like... You are not looking at this through the worldview of this is a quirk that someone has that they will put aside for the greater good of society, yeah, which is a specific framing that we don't see in a lot of media now, not even from Japan. It's old,
no, but we've been
conservative.
I've been watching anime for 20 years.
Yeah, and it's old conservative Japanese stuff. Like, it's, so it's not even something that you see much of now, but because I grew up with the American version of it, of it, where it wasn't really gay bashing, it wasn't like queers are going to hell. It was specifically like, you will grow out of this because you will realize, you basically, your identity as a man or a woman will take precedence over who you're attracted to, which is an attempt to be loving toward gay people while saying, like, you'll go to hell if you actually fuck somebody of the same sex. Like,
it's okay, but no.
It's okay, but no. And it's very, very, very familiar to me, so I understand it. And I'm like, okay, I have to explain this to people whose brains were not programmed this way when they were children. But mine was, and so I recognize it instinctively when I see it in other things.
Yeah, mine was not, but I've also been watching anime for a really long time.
But yeah, and Christian
Like, understand politics. So, like, it's really easy for me to get what this thing is doing and saying.
Yeah,
like,
well,
it's
I'm seeing a lot of people who are, and a lot of, like, ostensibly progressive people who are watching this, and they haven't had experience with that stuff. And so I'm like, okay, well, this is... This is an old tradition of you know, like, basically Ikuno's confession is just a stepladder to her getting over it. It is. I know it's
That's
it's
the
like,
way it was framed. That's
it's the way it was framed. And it's they are equating Ikuno's attraction to Ichigo as the same thing as any unrequited love. And but the difference is, for Ikuno, that love will always be unrequited because they believe that you can never find true happiness with another woman because that woman has the wing on the right side. You need somebody with a wing on the left side, like... It, like the bird metaphor. You see what I mean? It's you have to turn your brain into a different brain in order to understand this. And fortunately, that was my brain when I was a child.
No, you don't. No. No, you don't have to turn it into a different brain. It's just human beings saying things that human beings have been saying for a very long time.
You're
it's
right.
It's not special or different.
It's not special or different. It's just something
standard,
that I...
Standard... It's bugs... Bog
some anime fans, some anime fans have not encountered this ideology before, so I'm explaining it. That is the only my only point. Yeah,
yeah. I feel like I've seen it a lot. I feel like I've seen this a lot.
Some people definitely have, and they'll know what I'm talking about.
This exact attitude, like this exact thing. Oh, you're gay, but no, you're not.
It's well, a phase. Who hurt you?
It's a phase.
Who hurt you?
And I'm sorry you're broken.
Yeah. I know that you're attracted to ladies and you are a lady, but you will find greater, deeper fulfillment in being supported by a man. No, you won't. There's biodiversity. Everybody's different. Maybe not everybody wants your fucking heterosexual, like, dream of a white picket fence and 2.5 children, like... That's not everyone. And so framing it as, like, the true path to happiness is irresponsible and shitty. And that's what Darling the Franks are doing. They're framing it as the true path to happiness because they live in a society where that's outlawed for some reason, but they can't even explain why because it's such cognitive dissonance with anything applicable to modern life. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally, yeah. And the scene where the genderless villain who is like, it's evil and wrong to want to have babies.
What?
Is then slapped by... Well, look, the jackbooted thugs come in to stop a marriage.
Yeah. That happens.
I can't fucking believe... Yeah. Anyway, I was like, what the shit... Christmas with a capital C. That's what this shit is.
And you know, their leader is like a weird hermaphrodite or something, so therefore...
God damn.
Darling in the Franks.
Damn. Yeah, anyway. Look, you can have your conservative cartoons. You can have them. It's fine.
You can have them.
It's fine. Yeah, but like, this is really important to me. We can talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Like, there's no monolithic perspective. And the idea that for some reason you and I are personally responsible for having this completely even-handed, apolitical take on something like this.
Yeah.
You know, I reject that. I really do. And I think it's important for people who read and watch our stuff to know that. Like, I'm not interested in an apolitical stance, and I can't have one. And
if I feel some type of way, I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to lie. Because
you and I are a gay married couple.
Yeah. Well, that's also what I've built.
So we're watching Darling in the Franxx.
Well, I feel that's...
Well, and so, you know?
And that's what I feel like we've built something of a reputation on. It's like, look, you wanted us to share our opinions. Do you want us to not be honest about how we feel when it's less convenient for you? Because I'm not going to do that.
No, it's just...
And if you don't like it, you don't have to listen.
It's okay. It's all right. It's going to get a little angry. People are going to get kind of pissed off at each
other. Oh, yeah, and please...
It's okay.
Disagree with me.
It's fine.
It's fine.
The thing that I reject is that it is somehow... unprofessional or wrong for us to talk about the show in this way.
Yeah.
Because we get accused of that, I think, most often. Somehow it's unprofessional, wrong, or inappropriate for us to talk about this. And I would argue that, like, absolutely it's not.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I reject that entire feeling completely. Uh-huh. And, you know, I'm happy to engage with this. I said on Twitter last weekend, I said... I am more than happy to get on the mat with this shit. I'm not scared of it. I'm not scared of what it's saying. Like you said, it's bog standard conservative shit. It is bog standard. It is stuff we've been hearing for decades. Presented in this really kind of mealy-mouthed, weird, like, non-committal way where it's like, it's obvious they're getting at this, but they don't want to fully
dystopia that doesn't make sense.
They don't want to fully
I don't understand how we got here.
Yeah, it's just this persecution complex.
Yeah.
That's it. It's all it feels like to me. Look, you watch those thugs, like, run in with their guns and they drag this. Oh, they're trying to get married. Like, are you fucking serious?
All right, so and also the world building in this is really fucked up. James pointed this out in his review, but they can apparently within like 24 to 48 hours erase these memories. Excuse me, you're running a very bad dystopian hell world campaign that suppresses all thought that you find dangerous because all those kids saw that and you didn't wipe their memories? You just wiped the memories of the kids getting married and expect that that's going to solve the problem? We've already reinforced that these memories can reawaken, like, just by contact, but by Zero Two and Hero hanging out, they remembered everything from their childhood that had been wiped away years ago. So, like, reintroducing these two who just got married to the group that saw that all happen, they're gonna remember again very quickly, I think.
And then embrace.
And if they don't, that's a weird plot hole. And, yeah, if you can do it this easily, if it's that, like, not hard for you to just wipe people's memories, you would take the whole group. You're really bad at running a dictatorship if you don't take the fucking whole group who saw this happen and suppress all of their dangerous ideology and not just the two who got married so everybody can be sad about it. This show is dumb. God damn, you guys. Come on. This is not good writing. Anyway.
But you're not mad.
I'm very fascinated by... I don't regret having watched it, for sure. I'm fascinated by how lazy the writing is.
Look, I've watched all the God's Not Dead movies. I watched all that stuff. I am not frightened. There are no ideas that scare me. There aren't.
Uh-huh.
You should be willing to engage with all of this stuff. And I don't mean give it a fair shake. I mean, get on the fucking mat with it.
Yeah.
Tackle it.
Uh-huh.
You know? Get your arms around it and be like, well, here's how I feel. And wrestle it to the floor, you know?
Right, yeah.
That's fine. It's not... That's fine. That's how it's... I feel like that's kind of how it's supposed to go.
Uh-huh.
You know? I would imagine that the people who made this show, unless they're like... extremely thin-skinned about it and for whatever reason just cannot handle criticism from any perspective other than their, like, they just don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that they would at least be willing to engage, you know, willing to talk about it. Like, hey, what did you mean by this? And, like, if it's a bunch of mealy-mouthed, like, half-assed, passive-aggressive, you know, cowardly shit about how, well, we didn't really mean... Then why'd you fucking write it this way? Like... Think about it at least from the perspective of somebody who is not a straight boy.
Right.
You know?
Or, like, I know a lot of straight boys who are like, you know, I don't really, I'm not like 2.5 kids in a white picket fence and like, I need to like control my lady gently through doggy style robotism.
Let me rephrase that. It's like a really specific vision
of the future.
Let me rephrase that. Self-assured, extremely conservative, straight boy convinced that it's his duty to carry on the species.
Why doesn't someone give him a woman? If they do, he will surely be a good patriarch.
Oh.
So that's a whole different ball of wax.
Wow. Yeah. Darling in the Franks.
Yeah.
Jacob, it's fascinating to talk about this with you. And, you know, to be honest, like, I'm glad to talk about it. I'm happy to talk about it. I think this kind of thing, it might be frustrating for us and in ways, upsetting. But, like, unless you're willing to tackle this shit, unless you're willing to be like, all right, fine, bring it.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it. It's all right, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like that, you know, that's how I feel about it.
Mm.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Absolutely. I just, you know,
it's that thing where remember in Emperor's New Groove where he's tied to the
water.
Bring it on.
He's been through so much shit that I feel like that's how it is. And it's like, look, I just want to talk about this. I don't want to start a war with you, and you don't have to fucking agree with me. And I'm not saying
absolutely not.
but when you disagree with me, you don't have to like harass me and see me as like a threat to your ideology just because I said what the show is clearly saying,
or that Anime News Network owes you,
owes
you an apolitical perspective that somehow only discusses it from what a lore standpoint.
I mean, they didn't give us enough to go on.
Barely any.
They didn't give us enough to go on. Hell, you could Evangelion. I think it's a little bit weird when you only talk about the lore and you don't talk about like the actual emotional metaphor. But you could do it. Can't do it with Darling in the Franks. We don't have enough information.
When I talk about Evangelion, I do not talk about the lore because I don't think even Anno was interested in it. I don't think he cared at all. It was an emotional narrative. The whole thing's an emotional narrative. We were just watching Rebuild the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It's an emotional narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's about depression.
Well, my point, yeah. My point.
And self-hatred.
My point
was. And specifically
was,
about rejecting a lot of the bullshit.
Yeah.
That Darling in the Franks is trying to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, getting away from that kind of like self-hatred that leads to this shitty, culty thinking that leads to authoritarianism. Yeah. Like that. That is a lot of what Evangelion is about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
the Franks is just like, this is what happens when we get too far away from patriarchy. Yeah. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
It's like, this sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks. Like, from my perspective, from someone of my persuasions, it is just anathema.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. So, that's kind of how I feel, I guess.
Yeah. But Darling in the Franks, I can't just talk about it on a lore perspective. I can't talk about a character development perspective because the characters don't feel like fully realized. Man, we didn't even mention that I can't remember his name, the chubby kid.
Futoshi.
Futoshi just accepts that his role is to not carry on the species because nobody wants his fat genes and just officiates the wedding. That's really terrible. That is what the show is doing.
Is that the non-selfish act for Futoshi?
Yes.
Which is, if I'm not willing to lose weight, I don't deserve.
Well, it's just like he has to give up Kokoro. And he's like, well, here's the thing. And once again, it's particularly insidious because in a vacuum, this would be a meaningful expression of like, oh, Kokoro isn't my property, like, you guys are in love, I'm going to support you. That would be great in a vacuum. In the greater context of what it looks like Franks is doing, it's like, well, Futoshi is the fat one, and so therefore, obviously, like, he has not earned the right to a woman yet, so he can be, like, the supportive. Basically, he is putting himself in Mitsuru's position. Mitsuru thought he was subservient to Hiro. He thought he was, like, I'm insecure and I have to reach Hiro's place, but it's like, no, you are in Hiro's place. Futoshi was insecure and has to accept that he is inferior. That's the show. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, you know, he has to accept that, like, oh, he's playing the role of a priest who, but I remind you, they're celibate, you know, like, so I can't. Anyway.
They jackbooted thugs they're wearing tactical goggles during the day for some fucking reason, I think, right? Aren't they wearing goggles? Come in with guns.
I don't remember. I know that 9 Alpha or 9S, whichever one it was, I don't recall, who shows up is not masked, but he's like, y'all are having a wedding, are you? And then they get arrested.
He's like Skeletor, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll put a stop to this. I have no matrimony genitals.
On my watch.
There'll be no heterosexuality on Eternia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there won't be on Eternia.
No, on Eternia.
There isn't any of it on Eternia.
Let's move there.
I'm even kind of dubious about the king and queen, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
So, you know.
Now I just want to watch He-Man. Yeah, no, all right, well, shit. All right, well, there's another episode of this shit airing tomorrow. I guess we'll find out and talk about it next.
So, oh, yeah, so we know that Kokoro is definitely pregnant, right? Because they had the sex once, and that's how it works.
Like, it's where the show is fucking going.
I know, but also, they had the sex once, she's
so
having
the
a baby.
So the berserk mode robot is just lady who wants to fuck and, like, needs a baby? Like, baby crazy lady is the berserk robot, right?
Yeah, she needs to be...
Kokoro is screaming at the heavens, like, impregnate.
Here's the thing, they didn't follow up on that real great, because it was touched on once and never again, and then they dropped it for other plot points, but, like... the idea that the Franks goes berserk when the woman is too much in control and the man is not controlling her is, I think, perhaps talking about how women are emotional and need to be reined in. In Kokoro, it was baby craziness, but the other characters, we saw it briefly with Ichigo, and obviously 02 is just a walking emblem of this, but it's just that the woman can't handle things on her own. She needs the other wing to support her. But, The way that Franks frames the heterosexual relationship is the woman gives a man purpose, which is, again, why Mitsuru is fine abandoning his feelings, whatever they were, for Hiro in order for the purpose of helping Kokoro, and the man gives the woman stability. So she's untethered and unable to survive on her own, but the man has no purpose without her. This is their dogma.
Central dogma.
It's central dogma. It is very Ava, so yeah, central dogma.
Fuck, man. All right.
I ingested a lot of this stuff as a child.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think that about does it.
Yeah.
Fuck. Well, we'll get back to this again next week. We got more to talk about. I'm getting into Legend of the Galactic Heroes. I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. You know, even though it's another political narrative, yeah. I'll get through it. Okay, well, anyway, we'll get back to this next week, I'm sure. There'll be more to talk about. There always will be. Have you been watching anything else?
I've been watching a lot of other stuff.
Before we wrap, anyway.
Yeah. I guess one thing I kind of want to talk about is Tokyo Ghoul Read.
Oh,
Tokyo
yeah, Ghoul. How's that been going? So I feel like the show's been totally ignored.
Weirdly, so this is the biggest... this is the biggest gap in user feedback on the forums and stuff like that and traffic, because everybody is reading and watching this show ostensibly, but nobody's talking about it. And I think it's because we're all here out of obligation. Because the show is, they lost, the thing that was interesting about it was this, I mean, the source material is good, don't get me wrong, but the thing that was interesting about the show, because it was barely animated, was that the direction was so strong. Now it's barely animated and the direction is not really good. So, like, you're basically just watching for the story because the presentation is so buh. The soundtrack's still good. But, you know, it's the presentation of the story is so buh, and Sui Ishida, the writer, has structure problems. The story is all over the place. There are way too many characters, but, like, the thing that keeps people coming back to Tokyo Ghoul is, goddamn, he writes such sympathetic portrayals of absolutely everybody he has to write about, for even if this character's around for a chapter, and you're like, I feel deeply for this person. That's what Tokyo Ghoul does really well. The story's all over the place, it gets really tasteless sometimes, in terms of the content or the art or whatever, it gets confusing. He pulls out old soap opera twists and bullshit, like all this stuff. But you keep forgiving it because the characters are just so, like, just rip your heart out. You love these characters. So that's what it is. The thing I found fascinating about it is that I came into Tokyo Ghoul rethinking there's no way that they can make this turn, basically the premise for this whole soft reboot work, which is that Kaneki, the main character, has lost all his memories. Like, I was like, there's no way that they can make an amnesia story feel meaningful at all. And they did. Like, it's so good. Like, I really, really enjoy it. I feel like it taught me about a way to do right. Like, it taught me a way to write amnesia. It's like, oh, this is why people fuck up writing amnesia, and here's how you do it and make it meaningful, which is, instead of Kaneki losing his memories and now he's just, who am I? He's not who am I. It's It's he lost his memories and then he started a new life, and we're watching him in that new life, and we just get fully entrenched into this other person. And the show makes you believe completely that this is another person, that he has started over and he's found new purpose with this found family that he like takes care of and parents, and he has all the same traits, and that he's really smart. He loves literature. He's very like paternal and caring, but a little too passive. Like, it's the same personality, but his life is completely different. And then elements from his old life start showing up, but it's really like a different character who is like, who was this person who had this impact on you? And he's talking to characters from the first two seasons, and he's like, I need to learn more about who this person was that you remember, because he's not me. And so it's like, oh, that's how you write amnesia. You just make him a fully, instead of him wandering around going, who am I? So it feels like you're waiting for the plot to start. You write a fully fleshed out character who has this other character in his past, and he's having to reckon with it because the consequences of what he did are still around, even though he doesn't. You know, it's basically a Jean Valjean from Les Miserables type of thing, basically. Only with Jean Valjean, we didn't get to learn a whole lot about his life before Javert shows up and goes, ha ha. Like, but it has that strength of character where it's like, oh, okay, that's how you write amnesia. So unfortunately, the plot is all over the place. It's really confusing, but I like what he does psychologically with the characters. He's an incredibly empathetic writer. I like it, even though like he is clear, if we're talking about LGBT stuff, like, he has huge issues with gayness. Like, he's very terrified. That is a boogeyman for him, and he frames gay characters as very frightening or upsetting or odd or different. But, like, he's still sympathetic. It's just, like, a weird irrational fear that he has. And it's just really fascinating. So, yeah, like, Tokyo Ghoul, a mess of a show, but I kind of can't get over how good he is writing, like, character dialogue and psychology and stuff like that. So it's a toss-up, you know? It's like, I wouldn't encourage people to watch it, but if you're already in the life, you know what I'm talking about. You know why you're still watching this. So, yeah.
In the life?
Tokyo Ghoul is really long. if you're here after how many years of this fucking thing being around, and they still haven't reached a conclusion, but you're just like...
I think it's funny to me to hear, like, I'm watching a television show for a few years in a row to be described as the life.
No, it's a joke. I'm being facetious, obviously. It's not that serious.
Yo, if you're hard like me...
No. Well, and it's...
You've been hardened on the streets by watching a television show called Tokyo Ghoul...
That's not what I mean at all. But I also forgot about it. Like, I forgot about it since Rude, and I was like, oh, am I going to care about this? Yep. I guess I am. I came back to it. You know what I don't care about after coming back to it? Steins Gate.
I am not even kind of interested in Steins Gate. Well, I don't mean to be an asshole about it, but like, nope.
Steins Gate Zero is like all the things that I didn't like about Steins Gate, and like just reminding me that, oh, like, oh, I don't really like this about Steins Gate. So Steins Gate is the opposite thing where... Man, wait, it is the complete opposite of Tokyo Ghoul. Tokyo Ghoul's story is a mess, but I really love the characters. Steins Gate is like, I'm really interested to see where this puzzle box is going, because he's, you know, the writer's really fun and playful with how he, like, fucks up your interpretations of stuff and, like, where you think the story is going, and he surprises you. Steins Gate's really good at that, but the characters I don't care about, they're all otaku fantasy. None of them feels like a human, and all of them are, like, slavishly devoted to doing whatever makes Okabe's life easier, and I can't stand it. So, like, so Steins Gate, boo, Tokyo Ghoul, yes, despite myself. So, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, all right, I think that will probably do us for this week. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. Thank you for going over all this fucking stuff. Oh, geez, only a few more weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. By the time Anime Expo rolls around, we'll be done with Darling in the Franxx, right?
Yes.
Oh, boy. All right.
We won't have to carry that load into Anime Expo weekend.
Yeah. So we'll be back next week with movie chat and anime chat and all that stuff. All the things you expect from us. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. We'll see you all next time.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's our show. Thanks for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. It helps us out a lot when you do that. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you all next week.